the story of a 30-year search by U.S. intelligence agencies to perfect mind control. Some of those engaged in that search have agreed to talk about it for the first time. One said, "I think every last one of us felt sorry to attempt this kind of thing. We knew we were crossing the line." The search would be endless. From brothels, an agent says, "We learned a lot about human nature in the bedroom," to the mystical rites of a magical mushroom ceremony performed by an Indian shaman, to a Spanish bull ring. The bull has had electrodes implanted in the brain and is controlled by a scientist. There would be victims. One intelligence agency tried to peel this man's mind back to reveal its deepest secrets.
I lived through it.
This man worked on some of these programs. He would write of his work, "It was fun, fun, fun." This is the story of the search for mind control.
ABC News Close-Up, Mission Mind Control. With ABC News correspondent, Paul Altmaier.
The Four Faces of a Zombie. On March 2, 1967, Luis Castillo, age 24, was arrested by the Philippine National Bureau of Investigation on suspicion of conspiring to assassinate President Ferdinand Marcos in Manila. In a series of interrogation sessions, the NBI and Philippine Army investigators gave him truth serum at his request, put him under hypnosis. During one of these sessions, Castillo revealed he had been involved in an assassination 4 years earlier. Castillo told the NBI, both under hypnosis and truth serum, and also in a normal state, they had been hypnoprogrammed to kill a man riding in an open car. Although Castillo did not know the identity of his target, the scene was supposed to hit was in Dallas, Texas. The date was November 22, 1963. After revealing this information, Castillo asked for political assignment in Manila. He was quoted in the Manila Times as saying, "I'm afraid to go anywhere today. I am as good as dead now. I don't know how I got into Dallas or how I got out," Castillo reporters, "but I'm sure I did not carry a gun." The Manila Times reported that Castillo had arrived in Manila carrying a Philippine passport which identified him as Antonio Reyes Eldoraga, a returning resident who had been expelled from America for overstaying his visa and stealing a car. While in the U.S., Castillo had traveled under the alias Angelo Rodriguez, Razo Hernandez, Mario Rodriguez, Ignacio Gonzalez, and Antonio Eldoraga. Castillo told investigators that a woman with a German accent, a Mrs. Krebs, had given him initial instructions in Dallas. According to Castillo, she was one of many individuals who worked on him to place him in a deep hypnotic trance for the Kennedy job. Castillo said he had been private in the Cuban militia, Segunda Organización Defensiva of Santiago, Cuba, where he was initially chosen for training in espionage work. He was subsequently trained by the Defensia under Colonel Calma at a camp located about 15 miles from the Bay of Pigs. Among the members of the training cadre, Castillo said, were communication experts named Kartvatsky, along with some other Cubans and a handful of Americans. One American he identified was James Smith, who attended to Castillo's needs both as a civilian in Cuba and later in the United States. 3 years later, on October 2, 1966, Castillo was arrested in New Mexico and charged with driving without a proper auto registration. His arrest was made under the Eldoraga identity. Castillo was brought before New Mexico Justice of the Peace Elmer Bassett and sentenced to 4 days in jail. "The reason I gave him a jail sentence," Bassett said, "was I figured when a fellow has a hard time remembering what his name is, there's something wrong with him." After serving his sentence, Castillo was turned over to U.S. immigration authorities because he had no proof of U.S. citizenship. Bassett reported that Castillo said he was from Madison, Wisconsin, but was born in the Philippines. He couldn't show that he wasn't from the Philippines, or that he wasn't. Bassett also revealed that someone had called him a few hours after Castillo had appeared before him and asked that a man be released. "I don't know who it was," Bassett said. "I just told him I couldn't do that." According to the NBI, Castillo had Antonio Aldaraga's Philippine passport on his person when he was arrested in Manila. Based on information provided by the intelligence service of the Philippine Armed Forces, the NBI had been searching for him since February. They had evidence that Castillo, under the guise of Aldaraga, had made contact with a guerrilla group which was constantly plotting to assassinate Marcos and overthrow the Philippine government. The NBI set to work grilling their captured suspect. They knew something of his criminal past. They knew, for example, he had been arrested in 1962 for carrying a concealed weapon. They also knew that 2 years later he had been sentenced to a state reform warranty in Berderland, New Jersey, for larceny. But nothing prepared for them for the shocking story implicating him in the events in Dallas. They asked Castillo to submit to a lie detector test and were surprised when he said he preferred truth serum. Suspicious of both his strange story and his behavior, NBI officers called in a psychiatric expert to examine him. But even after the psychiatric judge Castillo normal, the NBI investigators still refused to take Castillo's bizarre and contradictory story at face value. Later, reporters connected with the Manila Times were equally dumbfounded by Castillo's strange behavior. One reporter described him as a now talkative, now reticent cloak and dagger man. He clammed up when he was asked whether he was in Philippines to help implement an assassination plot against President Marcos. In this truth serum statement, he claimed he had worked with a cell of Reds to end someone's life. But during his interview with the press, he said, "Neither do I admit it or deny it." When quizzed about Lee Harvey Oswald, he drew a blank. As a member of the Warren Commission, Gerald Ford was queried by the Philippine authorities about Castillo's revelations concerning the JFK assassination. Ford said he would not comment on the Castillo story until he had more information. A spokesman for the Dallas Police Department said that they had no record of Castillo. Nevertheless, the U.S. Embassy did agree to a closed-door meeting between embassy officials and the NBI director, Serafin Fausto, on the subject of Castillo. After the meeting, Fausto refused to comment further on the story, but he did tell reporters that, although publication of the story had prejudiced investigation on the case, one good thing had come out of it. He needed information coming in from the United States to shed light on the case. Fausto also made it clear that leads obtained from the U.S. Embassy justified continuing the investigation of Castillo's link to the assassination of President Kennedy. After making an official request for assistance from the FBI, the NBI clamped a news blackout on the story, and nothing further was published in the press. Private investigations later revealed that Castillo was spirited out of the Philippines, but not to take before a series of hypnotic sessions had taken place at the request of the FBI. The FBI wanted to have Castillo, while under hypnosis, place the time of the Kennedy assassination. They wanted to know when Castillo had come to Dallas, what time he arrived at the building, and from what location he was supposed to shoot. They wanted to know the time he left the building and the names of people involved, and any information which might indicate how the plot was hatched and by whom. It came as a surprise to the NBI that the FBI wanted Castillo questioned about the Boyas Airport, 8 miles south of Havana, Cuba. The FBI requested the tightest possible security be kept on any testimony obtained from the hypnotic sessions. In the last of 3 sessions requested by the FBI, Castillo was induced into a deep hypnotic trance by the ordinary talking method in an NBI interrogation room in Manila. While in that trance state, he was questioned for more than 3.5 hours. The hypnotist's report stated, "Initially, the subject indicated an admixture of desired susceptibility to post-hypnosis, but deep-stated resistance due to the presence of a post-hypnotic block. This block appeared to have been connected with the presence, nightmarish, of a Mrs. Krebs. The total removal of this block may pave the way for maximum results." The hypnotist reported that during the pre-trance warm-up, he examined Castillo and found little scars on his forehead, chest, and stomach and fingers. Castillo told him that the scars were a result of a car accident in the U.S., which happened when some men were chasing him while he was trying to deliver an envelope to some kind. Castillo mentioned that after the crash, he'd awakened in bandages in a hospital bed. Names which were presented to Castillo in the pre-trance interview were reported while he was under hypnosis. He recognized the names of several individuals who were then gaining notoriety in connection with the New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison's JFK assassination investigation. But Castillo revealed that he knew some of the people by other names. Throughout his recollections, Castillo suffered stomach cramps, said he felt a weight on his legs, and cried out in pain a number of times. Through the manipulation of the hypnotist, he was able to recall that on many different occasions he had been taken to a factory. Mrs. Krebs and Castillo had always driven to the factory in her car, and they had always entered through the front door. Castillo could not remember the exact location of the factory, other than it was located way outside Chicago. He spoke of a romantic relationship with his Mrs. Krebs, but while one moment he spoke of her as nice and kind, in the next breath he said he hated her. According to the hypnotist's report, one thing was certain. Whoever Mrs. Krebs was, she controlled the subject's activities and consciousness like a nightmare. Eliciting information from Castillo was no easy task. Over the course of many interrogations, the hypnotist discovered that Castillo could be taken to four different hypnotic levels. It appeared to the hypnotist that each level came closer to the truth. He labeled these states Zombie 1, Zombie 2, Zombie 3, and Zombie 4. Depending upon which zombie state Castillo was in, his mannerisms and identity changed. In the first state, Zombie 1, Castillo believed he was El Graga, and he told tales of anti-American espionage. During Zombie 2, he took an identity of a tough-talking CIA agent in trouble. While in Zombie 3, again Castillo emerged as an agent whose cover had been blown. At this level, however, he experienced a compulsion to kill himself. On the day he was to have assassinated Marcos, Castillo responded to a program he revealed in earlier interrogation. He attempted suicide in his jail cell by swallowing a bottle of epoxy. The Zombie 4 state revealed that Castillo's true name was Manuel Angel Ramirez, a 29-year-old native of the Bronx, New York. In this state, he had no recollection of his youth except for a hazy memory of his father, who Ramirez believed was a highly placed official at the agency. As Ramirez, Castillo said that most of his life had been spent in training with or on missions for the special operation groups of the CIA. He remembered one training camp where he'd learned clandestine and martial arts. Throughout their interrogations, the theme of programmed agent emerged. Castillo's testimony under hypnosis was that of an individual whose identity had been completely erased and reconstructed several times over. On May 30th, 1967, Castillo spontaneously went from his normal state into a zombie state. In answering Castillo's question about transfer from the hospital to jail, the hypnotist unknowingly said, "That depends entirely the big chief, you know." Upon hearing these words, a blank look came over Castillo's eyes, and all efforts to wake him were at first unsuccessful. The hypnotist then called out a series of phrases from Castillo's notebooks and found the phrases, "I will win if I don't lose my nerve," and "I must believe myself or no one else will believe me," awakened him. The next day was Castillo's birthday. The NBI planned to give him a birthday party as an excuse to get him drunk to see if his behavior changed. Castillo, it seemed, had a huge capacity for liquor. Drunk to the eyeballs, he saluted one of the NBI agents and called him Colonel. "Where do we fly tonight, Colonel?" he asked. The agent quickly told him he was to fly to the same mission as the last one. Castillo said, "Hopping on," then drunkenly fell into bed. He dug his fingers into his throat and vomited. He cried out for a doctor and between vomit spasms rattled out his mission to the hypnotist. He said his real name was Manuel Angel Ramirez. His rank was sergeant and he was assigned to the Strategic Air Tactical Command in South Vietnam. He said his immediate superior was Colonel Summers. He was in Saigon in January 1966, he related, and flown B-26 missions over Haiphong and Hanoi. He came to Manila, he said, to kill President Marcos in June, when the president would make a public speech. If his assassination attempt failed, someone else would get Marcos before the end of 1968, Castillo added. "I am dying," he groaned, and pleaded again for a doctor. He thought he was dying from a heart attack. "If I die today," he warned, "my secrets die with me." When the NBI doctor arrived, he examined Castillo and pronounced him fit, except for his obviously drunken state. He tried to give him a shot to calm him down, but Castillo protested violently. The doctor would then ask him to take a pill, when he did without resistance. 2 days later, Castillo was given another medical examination by Dr. Alexis Guerrero of the NBI. A series of tests were given to measure his breathing rate, pulse rate, perspiration, and other functions. All of these tests were performed in zombie states 1, 2, and 3. The doctor noted that in each state, there are vast differences in pulse rate and assumed, because of what Castillo said and the reaction of his heart and respiration, that he was experiencing some emotional agitation. Sodium amethyl was administered while he was in the zombie 3 state. According to the hypnotist, Castillo did not even notice he'd been given the injection. Soon he began to talk, and he'd done previously while in a drunken state. "I am a Sergeant Manuel Ramirez of the Tactical Air Command," he said. When asked to reveal his base, he said, "You'll never know," adding, "I'm a pilot. I've flown a B-26. "The NBI are suckers," he said, a little while later, "though they thought they had arrested me, but there I was, waiting for them to get me. I know of a great plot. I'm supposed to expose it after I'm arrested. I know I'll eventually return to my country, the U.S. I'll go through motions of a trial, conviction, and jail as a criminal. After a couple of months, I'll be released for my next assignment." Awakened from the zombie state, Castillo was told all about these various states and his strange behavior while in them. The hypnotist explained how he thought Castillo had been programmed. Castillo seemed baffled by this news. He said he was not told by anybody about being programmed. He said that Papa didn't even know about the zombie state. He grew agitated, saying that if he were in the zombie state, he might even kill Papa, and then the agency would go to blazes. Hell would break loose on the guy responsible for the zombie. Asked in trance to identify Papa, Castillo said that he was not just a guy, but was a real father. He described him as having a mustache and smoking a pipe. He said he was the only one who could send the agency to blazes if he, Castillo, was killed on this mission. He said Papa's initials were AD and that his first name was Alan. He said he would eventually tell Papa about the zombie when he got back. After more than 40 hypnotic sessions lasting from 1 to 5 hours each, covering the period from April 3rd to June 25th, 1967, the hypnotist reviewed the data and summarized it for the Chief of the Defense Intelligence Division of the National Bureau of Investigation. The summary report not only involved Castillo and the assassination of John F. Kennedy, it disclosed Castillo was a hypnoprogrammed zombie who would kill on cue. The summary report stated, "The zombie phenomena referred to here is a somnambulistic behavior displayed by the subject in a conditional response to a series of words, phrases, and statements, apparently unknown to the subject during his normal waking state. While under the influence of such a zombie state, the subject closed his eyes, rose bodily, walked, triggered a pistol, stared blankly, and fell to the floor with no apparent sense of physical pain. As far as could be determined, experimentally, the zombie behavior had for its objective the assassination of President Ferdinand Marcos of the Republic of the Philippines." The report also added, "Neither the presence nor the discovery of the zombie states in our subject should be regarded as noble or unique. If anything, the only remarkable character of the zombie state in our subject is its deeply ingrained and systematic presentation, indicating a certain disturbing degree of conditioning." In a lengthy summary, the NBI hypnotist and deprogram of Castillo recounted the details of exactly how he had uncovered the key that unlocked the program assassin's mind. The letters XBGUMIDUTXBX were found scribbled on a white surface of a cigarette package which was in Castillo's possession at the time of his arrest. The paper had been folded carefully and tucked into the back of his watch. Castillo had told investigators that this piece of paper was given him by a man named Luis Mauricio. Castillo said Mauricio also gave him money. Mauricio was known to the NBI as a member of the HUK guerrillas. Placing Castillo in a trance, the hypnotist called a series of letters on the cigarette package. Castillo did not react. He then tried calling out the letters, pausing at different places. He found that when you passed between G and the U, saying XBG UMID UTYBX, Castillo would reply with, "I am myself to kill." The hypnotist then tried the letters on one at a time, and then in different combinations. While many of the combinations produced no response, the following were significant. When the hypnotist said X, Castillo quickly answered Mauricio. When the hypnotist said BGU, Castillo slowly said, "I am myself." When the hypnotist said MI, Castillo responded, "To kill." In another session, the hypnotist experimented with the saying Luis Castillo as a command. The hypnotist reported, "A pathetic sight takes place after this. The subject turns his pistol to his own temple and squeezes the trigger as many times as his name is repeated." Whenever the hypnotist would say, "June 12, 1967, 12 o'clock, June 27, 1967, July 4, 1967, or January 1, 1968, Castillo would invariably aim the pistol and squeeze the trigger. The hypnotist found that after the preparatory command to put him in a trance, if Castillo's eyes were open and he saw a photograph of President Marcos, he would, with no verbal instructions, aim and repeatedly squeeze the trigger of his pistol, following the photo whenever it was taken around the room. If the hypnotist said the word kill while Castillo was following this program, he would drop heavily to the floor and remain motionless. The hypnotist's report also includes Castillo's amazing story about his participation in yet another organized assassination attempt. Under hypnosis, Castillo said the assassination happened before noon. He remembered being with a man called Lake, whom he described as a tall man weighing about 190 pounds, with a hawk-like nose, black hair, and oriental eyes set in a long face. Lake spoke with a foreign accent which Castillo could not identify. He said he remembered meeting Lake along with four or five other men in an airport. They drove together in a black car to a building. Castillo said that he thought the group included both American and foreigners, and he thought one man was Spanish. When the group arrived at the building, Castillo said they climbed to a second floor room, which he described after some uncertainty as brown. The room contained packing crates, a short brown table, a typewriter, and two lift-up glass windows overlooking the street. Lake opened a black suitcase, which Castillo described as a bowling bag with a zipper lock on it. It contained a scope and pieces of a rifle, which Lake assembled. He set the scope at 500 yards and gave the rifle to Castillo. Castillo did not seem certain about the make or caliber of the rifle, but finally said he thought it was Russian. Lake told him to shoot a man in the back seat of an open car in the middle of a caravan. He said the man would be seated with a lady or another man. A mirror was to be flashed twice from a building across the street, so Castillo would know when he was to shoot. When he saw the two flashes, he was supposed to shoot at the next car coming into view. When he was questioned about the identity of a man riding in the open car, Castillo said he did not know who the victim was. After Lake had assembled the rifle and had given Castillo his instructions, he went downstairs. Later, Lake rushed into the room. "They got him already," Lake told him. "Let's get out of here." He then grabbed the rifle away from Castillo, dismantled it, and stuffed it and the scope into the black bag. Castillo and Lake rushed downstairs, got into a car with two other men, and drove away from the building. They picked up a bald-headed skinny man after they turned to the first corner. Three or four blocks later, the car stopped and picked up another man. Castillo said he was riding in the back seat between Lake and a man who had joined them at a second stop. As the car drove away from the second scene of the crime, the unidentified man gave Castillo an injection while he wasn't looking. He went immediately to sleep and woke up in a Chicago hotel room with Mrs. Krebs. He and Mrs. Krebs got into a blue car and drove to Milwaukee, Castillo said. While driving there, they heard the news of the assassination of John F. Kennedy on the car radio. Within a few days after the hypnotist submitted his final report, Castillo was out of the NBI jail and had left the Philippines for parts unknown. It was later uncovered that Castillo was returned to the United States in 1967 and questioned by the FBI, whose spokeswoman said, "We talked to Castillo, and he told us that he'd fabricated his story about the Kennedy assassination, said he made it up in Manila." The official record says Castillo was sentenced to 6 years in the Missouri Penitentiary for robbery in June 1971. On August 1, 1974, he was released after serving 37 months. Castillo's last known contact was with his mother shortly after his release from prison. Since then, he disappeared from both his family and those researchers who would like to question him further. If Castillo had indeed made it up in Manila, as the FBI spokesman claimed, then he must have a phenomenal memory, an incredibly high tolerance to sodium ethyl and alcohol, and virtuoso acting ability. Neither psychological profile nor the life history of Luis Angel Castillo reports the conclusion that he possessed any of these talents. Whenever I projected the image on the right on a screen and asked the audience to identify the person in it, they've shouted back with confidence, "Sirhan, Sirhan." I then show them the image to the left. That is the image of Sirhan Sirhan taken shortly after his arrest. The image on the right is the image of Luis Angel Castillo. Their appearance is similar. They are about the same size, same color. They dress similarly, and some of their peculiar habits were similar. They each kept a diary, which strongly suggested they were both programmed in a similar way.